This congregation. We welcome all, regardless of age, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religious background, or political affiliation, factors that can separate us in the larger culture. If this is your first time visiting us, please join us after the service for refreshments and conversation. Feel free to take any brochures on UUism that are on the wall outside in the main room. Please sign our guest book in the entry hall. People with name tags with blue dots are members of our congregation and will be glad to chat with you about their experiences in this fellowship. Because our services do differ week to week, we encourage you to come back a few more times to get a flavor of our services and our community, especially during the next few months when we will be having a variety of lay leaders and guest ministers in the pulpit while we explore our options for ministry. Now is the time in the service where we ask that you turn off your cell phones. Parents of small children are reminded that we have child care and religious education classes. If you choose to keep your children with you in the worship room, please respect our need for this to be a time of quiet and peaceful reflection. Again, welcome everyone. Before we move into the main part of the service, in your order of service, I call your attention to the calendar. The Foss Valley Retreat is coming up next week, and April 30th is our wonderful service auction. There's a potluck dinner at 6 o'clock, and everyone is invited to bring a dish and to contact Katie Alberti so she knows what you're bringing. The auction starts at 7. There's a 50-50 raffle. There's babysitting. There's all sorts of wonderful service items that are going to be offered, and it's a lot of fun. We welcome everyone's participation. If you haven't turned in your form for what you're going to donate, this week is the deadline to do so. So please see Carol or Jack Topchick, and we hope to see you all at the service auction. Again, welcome, and we look forward to getting to know you better after the services.
morning. Today's service is actually the brainchild of Joseph Minetti, who had planned to preside and, luckily for me, invited a guest speaker to give our sermon today. As you may know, though, Joe, ironically, is off to Rome for High Church Catholicism in all of its glory, and I, the Roman Catholic, am here presiding over a service about atheism. I think the universe is having a little riddle, little joke at my expense. Gratefully, though, Rabbi David Greenberg had already agreed to preach for us today. We do welcome Rabbi Greenberg, who actually got his start right here at the UUFNW in 1976. He was the weekend minister for the temple which held their services in this sanctuary until 1981. The congregation has grown and flourished under his leadership and now has an absolutely gorgeous piece of property just down the road in Bedford. Rabbi Greenberg lives right here in Mount Kisco with his wife and three children. Our opening words today come to us were first spoken by Albert Einstein, who said, "The most beautiful experience we can have is the mysterious. It is the fundamental emotion which stands at the cradle of true art and true science. Whoever does not know it and can no longer wonder, no longer marvel, is as good as dead, and his eyes are dimmed. It was the experience of mystery, even if mixed with fear, that engendered religion, a knowledge of the existence of something we cannot penetrate, our perceptions of the profoundest reason and the most radiant beauty, which only in their most primitive forms are accessible to our minds. It is this knowledge and this emotion that constitute true religiosity." I think that we don't have a coming-of-age person, is that right, to light our chalice? Excellent. We don't want to put you on the spot.
I'm Wyatt Baker, and I'm going to light the chalice.
Everyone could please rise.
May the light of this flame
illuminate our lives and strivings of the Spirit. May it heal us understanding and strengthen love.
Love is the doctrine of this fellowship, the vestry truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek truth and love, to serve humanity in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow into harmony, thus to be covenant with one another.
Thank you, Wyatt. After our fellowship greeting, we're going to be singing hymn number 193. So if you would open your books and greet each other, say hello and welcome. Marshall will lead us in singing the children out. Service when we share our burdens and give voice to our concerns, our hopes, and dreams. Please come up and light a candle so that we can join you in your joys and sorrows.
Today I just want to light a candle of hope, actually.
Candle!
For my family, there's events that may occur in the next week that could make what's been a very ongoing, difficult period into something different. So I'm asking everyone just to say a prayer of hope for that. Thank you.
I actually brought extra, just in case. I remember I think there are plenty of candles, but we did run out once. I'm lighting candles of hope for three people I love very dearly in various stages of health issues. One, the closest thing to a mother to me, is recuperating from hip replacement in Florida. Another one undergoing treatment here, who I love. And a third, my friend's husband, who's scheduled for a very risky surgery in a week.
I want to light a candle for a child I don't even know. A friend of mine called me the other day to say that she was thinking of, I don't know if many of you remember, but 3 years ago, our friend's daughter died of leukemia when she was nine, but maybe 4 years ago now. And my friend in Seattle told me that she has these friends of hers, I don't think she knows them very well, whose daughter is dying. She's 8 years old. And they've just brought her back from a hospice. And it's just so sad. It just breaks my heart. I don't even know this child, but of course it brings up all the memories of our friend's daughter. And so if you can just keep her in your thoughts. Thanks.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Beverly Bellardi. I'm lighting this candle. It's a candle of hope for one of my best friends who was diagnosed with colon cancer. And she's a fighter. And she's fighting. So this is for her.
I'm Graham Clark. And this is a candle of joy and hope for the Artist's Way meeting that meets every Monday night in my house, which I've had the privilege to be at. I've been rereading the journal we were supposed to have been keeping this week, and the amount of good change that has resulted as a result of me being a part of that group is astounding. Absolutely astounding. So I wanted to light a candle of gratitude for that. And most of the people who go to that group are in this congregation. So thank you.
All right, John Bellardi, this is a candle of sorrow. A friend of mine's son in Iraq got shot in the eye. brain dead. They're flying him home. This is for him and his whole family. Let me say a prayer for him. Thank you.
I light our final candle today for all of those hopes and dreams and joys and sorrows that were both spoken and have gone unspoken. Our reading today is given to us by Algernon Black. He says, "Why not let people differ about their answers to the great mysteries of the universe? Let each seek one's own way to the highest, to one's own sense of supreme loyalty in life, one's ideal of life. Let each philosophy, each worldview, bring forth its true beauty to a larger perspective, that people may grow in vision, stature, and dedication. Most of the religious traditions agree on mercy, justice, and love here on earth. And they agree that the great task is to move people from apathy, from an acceptance of the evils in life, to face the possibilities of the world, to make life sweet for one another instead of bitter. This is the unifying ethical task of all the religions. Yes, of all the philosophies of all humankind. There is no need to force our own theological points of view upon one another or to insist that the moral life grows out of a final, absolute authority. Simply no need." And we will now make our offering to our congregation. A lot of the music that we've been listening to these months has been chosen by Ed Teberger. I think he's fabulous. Yeah. It's just so good. So thank you. And with that, I'd like to offer for us at this moment a time for some meditation. And so in the way that you're most comfortable, I would ask that everyone just find a way that you can be at rest in the seat where you sit. You may want to close your eyes. You may want to just drop your shoulders down a little bit. Let the muscles in your neck rest.
And for this moment, we will simply be in silence together as one fellowship. Joe chose a song for us today, and luckily got Graham to agree to sing it. But you'll see in your programs that the last verse of this song is in there for you. It is a Bob Dylan song, which means essentially that it repeats over and over and over again. So we're hoping that by the time we've gotten to the end, everyone will have been able to catch on. And I think that Graham will sort of tell us when he's at the last verse for all of us to sing together.
My name, it means nothing. My age, it means less. The country I come from is called the Midwest. I was taught and I was brought up the laws to abide. I live in has God on its side. Oh, the history books tell it, they tell it so well. The cavalry's charged and the Indians fell. The cavalry's charged and Indians die. Oh, the country was young with God on its side. The Spanish-American War had its day. And the Civil War, too, was soon laid away. And the names of the heroes I was made to memorize, with guns in their hands and God on their side. Oh, the First World War, it came and it went. The reason for fighting I never did get, but I learned to accept it and accept it with pride. For you don't count the dead with God on your side. When the Second World War came to an end, we forgave the Germans, and now they're our friends. Though they murdered 6 million in the ovens they fried, the Germans now too have God on their side. And now we have weapons of the chemical dust. If fire them we're forced to, then fire them we must. Just one push of the button
and a shop the world wide. Cause you never ask questions with God on your side. In many a dark hour, I've been thinking about this. How Jesus Christ was betrayed by a kiss. And I can't think for you, it's for you to decide. Whether Judas Iscariot had God on his side. So now I am leaving, and I'm weary as hell. The confusion I'm feeling, ain't no tongue can tell. The words fill my head and fall to the floor. If God's on our side, he'll stop the next war.
And now, without any more delay, I bring to you Rabbi David Greenberg to give us his words of wisdom.
I thank you all for having me here this morning. Though I have to say that the individual with whom I first spoke, Joe, was really the one who suggested the topic for this morning, which I really wasn't crazy about, but I said, okay, I'll, you know, try to address it as best I can, though I really never intended that I would devote all my remarks to that theme. And all of the less so, after experiencing what I've experienced here, during these minutes of the first part of your service, and that incredible, provocative song which we just heard. I first stood in this spot about 29 years ago. I was at the time completing my studies to be a rabbi at Hebrew Union College in New York. A small group of people had established themselves as Temple Shari Tefillah, was the name they gave to themselves, Gates of Prayer. And they rented space from the Unitarian Fellowship, this space. And I was wondering how I would feel coming back here in light of how many years have passed, how rapidly it feels that those years have passed, and the changes that have come into my life during those years, being married, having an older daughter who's 20, who attends the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York, my second daughter who attends Emory University in Atlanta, my youngest who's 16, who is a sophomore at Fox Lane, will be the starting pitcher tomorrow night against John Jay. And looking around this room and realizing that physically, the only thing that seems to have really changed are the presence of this piano. We used to make use of that organ. And 29 years ago, the room was not carpeted. It was it's just flat concrete slate. But without sounding in any way condescending, what I experienced here this morning was really very beautiful. This ritual, frankly, was so touching that I was thinking of, is that something that I might want to take back to the synagogue? And your song is incredibly beautiful. And I would invite you at any time to come to my synagogue and sing it. In one of our classic passages of our rabbinic tradition, it's a passage that dates back about 1,800 years. Our rabbinical sages declare in the name of God, "Would that the people forsake me, but keep my commandments." In that statement is the affirmation that it is actions that are at the heart of the Jewish religion, more so than belief or creed. Ironically, when I walked into this room, I heard, I guess it's your choir preparing the piece that they'll be doing, which is a traditional Jewish text affirming God. But in fact, nowhere in our holy book, which we call the Torah, the five books of Moses, is there a commandment, "You shall believe in God." The first of the 613 commandments is "Be fruitful and multiply." The commandment in the very middle of the Torah is "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." And while God is certainly referred to as the source behind the commandments, or perhaps it's assumed that it was God who made, quote, himself known by bringing the people out of Egypt to freedom, the Jewish religion really is predicated upon the holiness of deeds and not the holiness of belief, the holiness of creed, and certainly not the holiness of physical space. There's a comment in the Torah, in the book of Exodus, that right after the Israelites have received the Ten Commandments brought to the people by Moses, that they respond in Hebrew, "Na'aseh v'nishma," "We will do and we will understand." And I can't overstate that that emphasis upon doing continues to be at the heart of how we understand religion. That a religion that is not predicated upon good and righteous and compassionate deeds, I dare say, is not a worthy religion for the 21st century and the kinds of challenges and brokennesses that we face in our world today. A number of years ago, a book appeared that I suspect many of you read. It's entitled "When Bad Things Happen to Good People." The author, Rabbi Harold Kushner, had served as a congregational rabbi for many years. He had a son who was born with a horrible disease called progeria, where the child ages very rapidly and dies at a young age. He felt himself in great conflict between some of the traditional affirmations of God, of all of the religions, and the reality that he was experiencing in his own life, and the reality that people in his congregation, or every congregation, experience in their lives. Namely, how is it that a supposedly good and loving and all-knowing and all-powerful God could either cause, permit, allow bad things to happen to good people, whether it is my mother who died of cancer at 67, or any of your friends and loved ones. Every one of us has countless examples of unfair things that have happened to good people. And in the book, he points out some of the traditional explanations for how it is that bad things could happen to good people. The idea that God gives people what they deserve, our misfortunes come as punishment for our sins. It's one explanation, which probably is not only unsatisfying to all of us, but I dare say offensive to all of us. The explanation that bad things happen to good people because God has his reasons that we're just not able to understand. Somehow a way of taking that which appears to be bad, painful, and making it into something good. That also is an offensive notion for Rabbi Kushner. And I suspect for many of us also. Where there is the explanation of Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, a major Orthodox thinker of the late 20th century, who said that suffering comes to a nobleman to purify his thoughts of pride and superficiality, to expand his horizon. The purpose of suffering, he said, is to repair that which is faulty in man's personality. In truth, that doesn't satisfy me either. Doesn't explain for me in any satisfying way why I can walk into a hospital and see little children who are suffering. Doesn't satisfy in any way why a woman surgeon crossing the street outside of Sloan Kettering the other day would be tragically killed, and with her, the future wisdom and ability and talents that she might have brought in the saving of human life. And what Kushner concludes is that all of these explanations are means of defending God based upon the premise that God is as a loving parent who controls what happens to us. And actually, I thought I had longer than I have. I only have 15 minutes, so I'm going to skip a whole thing of what I was going to talk about with the book of Job, okay? And just come to the conclusion that I would set before you. And that I'm sure most, if not all of you, already accept. And that is that God does not control everything that happens in this world. That God is not the cause of our misfortunes, that some are caused by bad luck. Some are caused by bad people, and some are simply an inevitable consequence of our being human and being mortal and living in a world that has natural laws. Just as trees and flowers get sick, so tragically, people get sick. Accidents occur. Tsunamis occur based upon a natural law that exists. And we as human beings, we are the great question. And so the question that I would ask of you is the same one that I ask of myself. And that is, in the words of Einstein, Is it that everything is but chance, and that nothing in life is a miracle? Or is it, as Einstein said, that everything in life is a miracle that we're just not given to understand? For me, and not only for me, but for many traditional Jewish thinkers, while the term used might be different, I would suggest to you that when we speak of God, first of all, we're speaking of a notion that no words can convey, because it says a conversation I had with an astronomy professor a few months ago who teaches at NYU. I asked him the question, with all of the technology that we have, what do we say about what is ultimately out there? After the millions or billions of planets and galaxies, is there at some point an end to the universe? Or does it just keep going indefinitely? His response to me was, we don't talk about that. Because we don't have either the words, the concepts, or the knowledge to be able to talk about that. And so what I would suggest to you is that God is the enabler whereby we have the potential to become human in the fullest sense. For me, the truest evidence for God is what each of you and your children and grandchildren are and have yet the potential to become. I referred to my three children. Each one started when a speck of sperm united with an egg. A baby develops, and usually it develops in a normal fashion. Gratefully, I was able, on a sonogram, to count of one of my children 10 toes, 10 fingers. I couldn't see the soul. I couldn't see the character. That would come later. The baby comes into the world knowing its own needs. It demands satisfaction at that very moment. She could care less about who else is in the room, only that her needs have to be satisfied at that moment. And then with time, that infant grows into a mature person, loving, giving, sharing what he has with those who are less fortunate, feeling compassion and acting on that compassion. I'm sure you're all familiar with the term Hasidic Judaism. Hasidim are Jews who wear black hats and black coats. It's a form of Orthodox Judaism. The founder of Hasidic Judaism was named the Baal Shem Tov, the master of the good name. And he said that the world is full of miracles, only that man takes his greedy fist and places it in front of his eyes, and he can no longer see the miracles. I want to quote Milton Steinberg, a thinker of the 20th century. And he said the following: if the believer has his troubles with evil, the atheist has more and graver difficulties to contend with. Reality stumps him altogether. leaving him baffled not by one consideration but by many. From the existence of natural law through the instinctual cunning of the insect to the brain of the genius and the heart of the prophet. This then is the intellectual reason for believing in God, that though this belief is not free from difficulties, it stands out head and shoulders as the best answer to the riddle of the universe. Earlier, before this service began, I met a gentleman. I hope I'm not embarrassing him, but he related to me that he was born Jewish. And I said, "What are you doing here?" And he said that no one had been able to give him an answer to where God was between 1933 and 1945. In our Jewish tradition, we believe that man, to be man, is created with what we call the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Ra, the inclination to do that which is good, and the inclination to do that which is evil and selfish and wicked. Freud called it the superego and the id. But for Judaism, the constant struggle that every human being goes through is a struggle between these two dimensions of him or herself. And if we are strong enough, courageous enough, nurtured with enough love, the Yetzer Tov prevails, goodness prevails, but that in fact God is the one who makes possible that struggle within us that, as best as we know, takes place within no other creatures. Where was God during those years? God was with those people in Auschwitz, starving, but who shared a piece of bread with somebody who was also starving. God was with that man, or in that man who spoke in my synagogue just two nights ago, Jaap Pennerat, from Amsterdam, who single-handedly and repeatedly risked his life to save 400 Jews by falsifying papers and leading them 20 at a time out of Amsterdam, deceiving Nazi officers at a checkpoint and taking these people to freedom. God was with a man who I visited with some of my people in the congregation about 8 years ago. His name was Gustav Mikulai. He was about this high. He's in his 80s in Bonn, Germany. In Budapest, he snuck himself into a deportation camp wearing the outfit of one of the people about to be deported to Nazi camps. Repeatedly entered into the camp, snuck out some 80 people who he led to freedom, repeatedly risking his life. That's where God was during those years. It wasn't God's failure. It was man's failure. Just as it's man's failure every time a kid gets picked on at Fox Lane High School, it's man's failure wherever we look in the world today, and bigotry and prejudice and hostility are played out against any individual or any group of people. I wish it was different. I wish that the world was such that good people always got what they deserved, because there is certainly enough tragedy in our world to cause us to despair. But for Judaism, to despair is one of the worst of sins, because all of us have within our power and ability the capacity to fix at least some of the brokenness of our world. End with a thought. Next Saturday night, we Jews celebrate Passover. We have what's called the Seder, where we retell the story of the Exodus from Egypt and the preciousness of freedom. And something that occurs at the beginning of the Seder is that we take a piece of matzah and we break it in half. One half we hide someplace. Later on, after the meal, children go search for the broken piece of matzah. And if they find it, they're given some sort of prize. It's a way of keeping them involved and intrigued in the Seder, as are many of the things that we do. Because the real purpose of the Seder is for the parent to relate the story and its values and its teachings to the child. That other piece of matzah, though, that we didn't break, we hold up in the air and we recite a passage actually not in Hebrew but in Aramaic. One of the explanations for why Aramaic, which was the ancient spoken language in Israel, is because the angels in heaven, or the figurative angels, understand all languages but Aramaic. Right, you're laughing before the punchline. And with this piece of matzah, we say, "This is the bread of affliction. Let all who are hungry come and eat." And our rabbis explain that the passage is in Aramaic because when it comes to feeding the hungry of our world, we dare not rely upon angels. We have to be the ones to do that. So we start with a broken piece of matzah to symbolize the brokenness of our world. The brokenness of slavery, the brokenness of homelessness, the brokenness of loneliness, the brokenness of poverty, the brokenness of inner demons with which so many people struggle. You name the different forms of brokenness. Later in the Seder, the child comes back with the other piece. Is it a game? Or is it really a message of hope and promise that wholeness can come to our world, that the two pieces of matzah can be united, but only through the child, only through us, only through our reaching from our hearts to make this a kinder and a better world? Honestly, I could go on for, I could probably go on until the funeral I have at 1 o'clock. But I know that you have some kind of exchange of ideas and things, and so I think I'll stop and just say thank you for having me here. And if anybody wants to ask about some of the community service projects that our synagogue is involved with, I'd be glad to talk about that, but I think I'll stop with that. This didn't used to be here, by the way, this podium. It's much fancier than what you used to have.
Would anyone like to participate in our time for congregational sharing?
I really want to thank you for that extremely moving sermon. It really gave me a lot to think about. I'm facilitating a discussion group on Sunday mornings, and one of the books we're working on right now is, actually it's a book about Unitarianism, and one of the chapters of one of the titles is Deeds, Not Creeds, which came to my mind as you were talking about the emphasis in Judaism on, I guess, bringing God to earth by actions rather than by simply believing. And I think that is a very important message.
In one of our, not that I have to comment on what everybody says, but what your comment reminded me of a classic rabbinic passage where the rabbis of, again, 1800 years ago are really speaking for God and say something to the effect that where human beings do not affect justice and loving kindness, there it is as if I am not God. So, it's the same.
Thank you. That was a really inspiring sermon. And I don't usually share, but I wanted to. I was brought up Jewish and still consider myself Jewish.
You also, in this crowd, had one of the best faces to speak to.
Oh, thank you.
And by that I mean every speaker learns that there are some faces that are especially welcoming and responsive to what you're saying. And you
oh,
want to find
you.
Those faces as opposed to the ones who are sleeping and bored.
Well, I was very absorbed in what you were saying, and I was just thinking about my father, who came from Poland and was a survivor of the Holocaust, was liberated from Bergen-Belsen. And I grew up in a family in which my parents were both atheists. My father said he could never believe after everything he experienced. So I was really thinking about what you were saying with God being with those people in Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen. I don't know, it's food for thought. I'm just thinking about how my sisters and I have dealt with it. My eldest sister is Orthodox, and my middle sister's kind of conservative reform, and I'm Unitarian. So I mean, I'm sure that part of the reason I married my husband, who's not Jewish, is because for me, it felt safer. You know, somehow the Nazis were always around the corner. So, but anyway, I just wanted to thank you because it's really made me think in terms of, you know, just reevaluating my views on is there a God or not.
Could I invite you to do something, and that's... Our synagogue is actually, if you continue up Route 172 and you go under 684, the first street you come to is Baldwin Road. Mm-hmm. You go down the hill and around the turn and you'll see a sign, Temple Shari Tefillah. About 6 months ago, we dedicated a significant memorial to the Holocaust, which lists, among other things, the concentration camps, including Bergen-Belsen. Because we have people in our congregation, either who themselves were there or whose parents were there. You might want to just go by there and take a look and
we will
and see it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm also one of those faces that was listening.
Jewish too?
I'm a Judaist.
You what?
I'm Jewish, Buddhist, and Unitarian.
You're not from Israel, are you?
I was born in Czechoslovakia. I moved to Israel when I was 2, came here when I was 10.
Ruchim habayim.
Toda rabba. Both of my folks are Holocaust survivors. And I just wanted to mention something I learned a long time ago. I believe I read The Tree Grows in Brooklyn when I was in high school. And one passage in there I never forgot. She says in there, their sufferings were wasted on them, because they did not learn compassion. And I think we have to be very careful when our hearts are broken to keep them open and not to develop scar tissue and close ourselves up, to be in touch with the suffering and to learn compassion and love and understanding and not to become bitter and closed. Thank you.
I'm going to quote you. On Friday night, which is the night before Passover, because the whole purpose of the Seder really is not just to tell the story, but it's to open the eyes and the heart so that we, in fact, look out at our world today and realize that every one of us is needed, right? So thank you.
I just want to thank you as well. I grew up Christian, 100% Lutheran, as Garrison Keillor would say, and When I learned about the Holocaust, I was about 13 years old. I was taking a catechism class in the Lutheran Church to be confirmed, and reading Anne Frank in school at the same time. And I, you know, that's when I became an atheist. That's when I decided, you know, I can't do this anymore. I can't be a Christian anymore. And that's why, part of the reason why I came to the Unitarian Church is that, is because service is one of the tenets, or, you know, one of the things that we base our faith on. And there's a tradition of serving mankind. There's a lot of Unitarians that were involved in the anti-slavery movement, in the women's rights movements and anti-war movements and things like that. And, you know, having grown up in the 60s, I thought that that was the place to be, place where you could, you know, devote your life to living your beliefs and acting your beliefs rather than having some kind of a doctrine to believe in.
Thank you.
I'm going to walk over to Henderson, but while I do, I just want to say that when I teach, and I always teach the Holocaust, and I always teach these sort of responses to evil, and one of the things, because it's at a Catholic college, one of the things I always talk about is in the gospel that Jesus, the promise that Jesus makes is, where two or three are gathered, there I'll be. The promise is never, I'm going to make everything okay for you. The promise is one of accompaniment, just of simple presence.
While you're walking there, can I just make a statement related to nothing? Pope John Paul II was, for the Jewish people, probably the best pope in the history of the papacy. As a child, he was a goalie on a Jewish soccer team in Poland. And while some of you may resent this, it's been said of him that he was a Catholic priest with a Jewish heart. Not that we have a monopoly on heart. We don't.
Thanks again. It's too bad your congregation didn't stay in this building and we could take advantage of you repeating your services on Sunday morning.
Quite honestly, with two kids in college, I couldn't afford for us to stay here.
But I gathered from what I got, mostly from what you were talking about, was the fact that we always push God out to be what is in the unknown, and therefore a mystery. But also what I got out of what you said was that the power is with us. There is no other power except us to make changes. We may rely on the concept that there's a power greater than ourselves, but as you pointed out, it's not active.
That's not to say that there isn't a part of me that doesn't at times, you know, say, you know, please God, you know, help do X, Y, or Z, or please God, you know, let my child be healthy. I mean, I'm not a completely rational being, just as none of us are. I mean, we are created, said the great philosopher Maimonides, with both a rational faculty and an imaginative faculty, and that for him, and he was, you know, an intellect in the school of Aristotle, or a follower of Aristotle, he believed that it was that ability to think and to reason and to imagine that is our godliness, if you will, that is the divine aspect of existence manifest in the human being. Our ability to have this kind of a conversation and our capacity to act for the good rather than just closing ourselves up and worrying only about ourselves. Are we finished?
We're going to close our service.
Let me just say one other thing then. First of all, this is a great audience, and, you know, it's true that no man is really a prophet in his own land. whether it is a, you know, father at home or whatever application that has. But there's two things that I'm especially proud of. One is that teenagers of our congregation returned last month, spending a week in Nicaragua with teenagers from the Bedford Presbyterian Church, building this time four houses for people who didn't have anything other than broken down shacks made out of plastic and cardboard. And we have another 20 that are returning in July to do it again. And the other thing is that about 3 years ago, a friend of mine showed me a picture of a girl whose name is Michal Ganon. She lives in northern Israel. She was about 20 years old. She was standing at a bus stop, and a terrorist blew himself up, and both of her legs were blown off. And my friend Jacob knew of her family, and they were poor, and parents divorced. And he was trying to raise some money to help the family cope with the financial burdens that now weigh on top of the medical and emotional burdens. And told me about it, gave me some papers, some newspaper articles about her. And they sat on my desk for about a week and a half or so, and I looked at them one day and I saw her picture, and there was something in her picture that reminded me of my oldest daughter. Not that she looked like my daughter, but my daughter was the same age, and I tried to think, how would something like this affect my daughter and our family? And what a, I mean, tragedy. We don't have human words to describe the agony, okay, of this girl. And I resolved that I would try to help him. And to make a long story very short, from that time until now, we have since embraced 78 individuals whom we have visited in Israel, with whom we have a relationship. You pass around the basket in a very gentle way. At the end of every service, and every Saturday morning, we usually have two kids become bar bat mitzvah. Every Saturday afternoon, we have two. And every Friday night, we have a service. Every weekend, every person who comes in receives a flyer with the picture and a little story of one of these 78 individuals. And at the end of the service, I tell them of how our congregation has a relationship with them, and how to date we have raised between $600,000 and $700,000, every dollar of which has gone to those individuals, including this check which I got from you today. And I tell the people at the end that whether it's $5 or $10 or $20 or $100, okay, that the money that they give today, they're not going to miss tomorrow, but that it's going to make a profound difference in people's lives. And I started doing that because here were people dressed, suits and ties, tuxedos, going off to a party that probably costs $150 or $250 a person, and in many cases, people putting a dollar into the basket. And I thought that that was shameful, okay? This is not the Jimmy Fund in the movie theater where you can, you know, feel as though you've done some great mitzvah, some great deed by putting a dollar into the basket. And I'm not, believe me, this has nothing to do with what people put into the basket of your fellowship here, okay? This has to do with an urgency of something just short of saving human life. And it's amazing that once I started talking in terms of dollar amounts, that in fact the amounts have become larger. But it's something that I feel very proud of that we've done as a congregation, and that also conveys the message that our Jewish tradition teaches, that while It's not for you to complete the task of fixing the world. Neither are you free to turn away from it. So I thank you, and it's been very rewarding for me to be here with you this morning.
Thank you very, very much. It was wonderful. And our choir is going to make their offering. Our closing words come to us from John Godfrey Sachs. So oft in theologic wars, the disputants, I ween, rail on in utter ignorance of what each other mean, and prate about an elephant not one of them has seen. If everyone would rise for our chalice extinguishing.
Hi. I just want to make a quick announcement. We're doing a breakfast run this coming Sunday to bring food and clothing to the homeless, and I'm still looking for donations of clothing, seasonal clothing. My name is Jan Weiss, and if you're interested, come in afterwards, and I'll give you my phone number and try to make arrangements, because we just have a week left to put this together. Okay? Thank you.
A new benediction to our service. So after our chalice extinguishing, Graham's going to go through it once, and then we're all going to join him, and we'll try in the weeks to come to see if this comes. And so together, we're going to extinguish the chalice.
We carry the flame of truth and love until we meet again. Two amendments. One is there's only two. This very day is at the end of the benediction, and it should be, of course, this very day instead of the very day. It's right in your order of service. It goes, the bell of truth is in our hearts this day and every day. Between our hand and hammer and the universe, we make this very day, this very day. Do you want to go phrase by phrase? I'll sing it and you repeat, okay? The bell of truth is in our hearts.
The bell of truth is in our hearts.
This day and every day.
This day and every day.
between our hand and hammer. And the universe we make.
And the universe we make.
This very day.
This very day.
This very day. All together, ready? The bell of truth is in our hearts this day and every day. Between our hand and hammer and the universe we make this very day, this very day. Well done.